my lovelies, and welcome to Final Girls Horrorcast, the show where we discuss some of the horror, thriller, and sci-fi movies currently available on your favorite streaming sites. I'm Amy.
And I'm Carly.
Today we're discussing The Witch, written and directed by Robert Eggers, and Green Room, written and directed by Jeremy Saulnier.
Yep, any of those.
One of those things. You know, I watched like a bunch of interviews with him. You'd think I'd like remember how. I'm sorry.
I thought it was Saulnier. I've only watched a couple.
It's kind of hard to say because it looks like Saulnier, but yeah. Then there's an I in there, and it makes me want to sound French for some
sound
reason.
Fancy.
Yeah.
I get it.
So both of these movies are currently streaming on Amazon Prime, and we're about to spoil them. So consider this your spoiler alert. If you haven't watched them yet, you should. So do that, and then come back.
If you haven't watched them yet, what are you waiting for?
I don't know what you guys are waiting for. So both of these movies came out in 2015, but they're 2016 wide releases.
Yeah,
so
wide release.
I'm considering them 2016 releases.
Me too.
You should see them both. They're both great. I feel bad if I'm spoiling them, so I gave a warning. I shouldn't feel bad.
Yeah,
we're doing it.
Yeah. Okay. You know.
But before we jump into those movies, let's get started with the segment we like to call
Trailer Trash Talk.
Our trailer for today is Incarnate, due for theatrical release this week, December 2nd. It's directed by Brad Peyton and written by Ronnie Christensen. Look, I said those names very good.
You
nailed
them.
I did a very good job. They're very simple names. I was able to do that. Brad Peyton is responsible for, notice how I'm saying he's responsible for, not he did them, San Andreas 1 and 2, and Cats and Dogs, The Revenge of Kitty Galore. You know.
I have never seen that.
Yes, you have. It's your favorite movie.
Don't tell everyone that. I have seen San Andreas, though.
And?
With The Rock, right?
Yes, and?
I mean, it's a disaster movie. Yeah. It happened.
Like, is it a disaster movie, or is it a quote-unquote disaster movie?
I see what you did there.
Yeah, like what I did there?
I mean, it's fine.
Well, we're not like talking about that one anyway, so it's fine, but
yeah, it's fine. It's like one of those movies where, like, you get this script and, like, you do what you can because it's just kind of a Hollywood disaster movie.
And they do the whole, in the beginning of this trailer, they do the whole, by the makers of Insidious, like, don't, Insidious, like, this is not done by the same person that did Insidious. by the same guy that did The Revenge
of
Kitty Galore.
It sure has the same premise as Insidious.
No, it has the same premise as, like, The Cell, right? Did you ever see that movie?
Yeah, okay. No, I can totally see that.
Yeah.
But it also, okay, I like that. Yeah.
Thanks.
It does have the same premise as The Cell, but it's also like, you know, going into your brain and figuring shit out.
Yeah. So like, basically
Insidious as well. So it's like if Insidious and The Cell had a baby.
That's true.
Because it's, like, kind of future-y high-tech, it seems like.
With exorcism, for some reason.
Yeah.
Okay, so this movie is basically about a little boy who is possessed by a demon. And they tried exorcists, and it didn't work. So they found this guy who can go into his head and try to chase the demon out, or something like that. Or
it's
something.
It's like an unconventional exorcist.
It looks so bad. It's like laughable.
I'm wondering why, because okay, so the little kid who's possessed in this is I told you the same kid. He's Bruce Wayne in the show Gotham.
Yeah.
And he looks a lot older in Gotham than he does in this movie. So I was kind of like, what's going on with this movie? Apparently this movie came out in like Belgium last year in 2015.
Okay.
But then they just like put it on the shelf for USA release. So I'm wondering if they, like, changed it at all or if they were just finally like, we should put this thing out. Let's do it.
I don't know. I can tell you right now.
It was done in, like, 2013. So well, I mean, I'm like,
it doesn't, I sincerely doubt this movie's going to be worth seeing. It looks boring, overdid. Yeah, there's nothing really interesting happening here. Like, it's kind of an interest. Like, the most interesting part of the trailer is like, oh, look, it's a little boy who's possessed instead of a little girl. I'm not into it, and I don't know.
Space exorcism.
And all of the like special effects things you see in the trailer are people on the ceiling. So for some reason there's people on the ceiling constantly that are falling down on you.
Well, I guess so. We got Bruce Wayne in it. Then like the little kid from Krampus, I blanked.
Okay.
Is in it. And then Aaron Eckhart. And then everybody else is just kind of like whatever.
Yeah. I'm kind of like whatever when I watch this trailer.
Me too. It didn't even capture my attention. I was just like, I'm bored.
I like that we're actually trash talking a trailer.
I know. Usually we're like, I see it.
Yeah, looks good. Let's do it. Great. Yeah, this looks terrible.
Not like good. I won't see this.
Hot garbage.
Okay. I will see this in 3 years when it's already been on Netflix for like 2.5.
And you're drunk and sick or something.
No,
and
we're going to talk about this on our podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
That's when I will see this movie, when it is on VOD and we're scheduled to talk about it.
Oh my God. Okay, so let's jump into The Witch.
Woo!
Yeah. The Witch, American release, February 19th of this year, written and directed by Robert Eggers, starring, Anya Taylor-Joy, Ralph Ineson, and Kate Dickey. Yes? Maybe?
That was a solid job.
Thank you. Basic plot is that there is a family during the 1630s. They are excommunicated from their village, and they're struggling to survive on their own in pretty much the wilderness, while a seemingly mysterious force in the woods slowly deteriorates their lives. I wrote that plot myself, and I still can't even say the words in it.
Did a beautiful job.
Oh, thank you, my love. So this movie's amazing. It's so good.
I love this movie. I loved it even more the second time that I watched it, because the first time that I watched it, I feel like I was expecting a different movie, because I'd been seeing trailers for this film for, I think I saw it in February. I'd seen trailers for it as early as like probably like September, October. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it was very much kind of portrayed as being this terrifying, horrifying movie, like scariest movie of the year. And so the first time that I watched it, I was sitting there expecting to be scared, like jump scare, like horror, like, you know, traditional kind of horror film scare, where it's not. It's like a mind fuck scare. You're sitting there. And so the first time I saw it, I really liked it, but it was a totally different type of film than what I was expecting.
It's really atmospheric. Really, really super atmospheric.
Exactly. And the second time that I watched it, I was more so genuinely scared, because I was like, I knew what to expect, and I knew not to expect anything like jumping out at me. But like the mentality of it, just the visuals, everything is just like so amazing. I love it so much.
Well, that's one of my questions is, did the trailer mislead the audience? I mean, this movie was successful in theaters. It was very successful in theaters. I was so excited to see this movie. And I went on opening night. I was stoked.
Yeah.
But the trailer is amazing. It's a really good trailer. It really gets your blood pumping and freaks you out. And then when they say it's the scariest movie of the year, you like believe them, because it looks awesome. And it is very, it's frightening, but it's not jump scary. And a lot of people think of that when they think of scariest movie of the year. Yeah. They think of jump scares, they think of gore, which this film has very little of that.
Exactly, and I feel like that kind of setup maybe hurt it a little bit with people, because I saw a lot of my friends that are truly horror movie fans really liked this film, but the people that kind of are just like casual horror goers, I guess, for lack of better words, I did see a lot of people saying like, what are people talking about, scariest movie of the year? Like, that doesn't make sense to me. Like, it wasn't blah 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 blah.
Like, because some people approach horror movies like roller coasters. You know, like, it's an experience you have, get really scared, and then it's over. Whereas other people, like, I think you and I are more along the lines of just really wanting to see something creative, different, and interesting.
Exactly.
That can make us freak out a little bit in our heads. Like, I like all different kinds of horror, but this is definitely not a... I mean, The Witch and Green Room are both very, very different movies.
Oh, yeah.
And Green Room was more of a terrifying, like, shock you in your seat roller coaster ride, whereas The Witch really isn't. It's very slow moving, and there's some super disturbing imagery in the beginning that terrified me.
Yeah.
Like, literally in the audience, I was like, I don't know if I can handle this during the baby part. When the baby gets taken and she's mashing her up in, like, her, like, butter churner, and then...
And then you see, like, the guts, and she's just, like,
rubbing it all over herself, and then, like, shaking, and then levitating and turning into a bird. No!
It's terrifying. Love it.
I mean, I loved it so much, because I'd never seen anything like that on film, really.
Yeah.
Because it's... I don't know. I don't know why it's so hard to do a movie about a witch that's really about the witch. Do you know what I mean? Like...
Yeah, I totally do.
Because a lot of, okay, so a lot of the movies taking place during this time, first of all, there's not a lot. This is even before the Salem witch trials. This is like 60-something years before that even happened. So, I don't know. There's just something different about it. Like, you see, like, the old school witch movies, it's more about the witch trials, and, like, they're not really witches. Or it's, like, cheesy, like, Hansel and Gretel versus the witch, whatever that stupid movie was that came out a couple years ago. Do you remember that movie, Witch Hunters? Hansel and Gretel, Witch Hunter?
Whatever. I think I saw it, but I don't really remember anything that happened during it, so obviously it wasn't very, it didn't pop out at me.
It's rare to see a movie in this time period be actually scary.
Yeah.
Like, and I think this, that Robert Eggers does a great job.
He did amazing.
I think the trailer maybe did too good of a job. Do you know what I mean? Like, it did what it needed to do, getting butts in seats. But it
I
also...
I think that the trailer was great. I think it was... I think what the reviews are what hurt it.
Yeah.
Because especially, like, in Hollywood, like, big box office horror films are usually, like, your Friday the 13th remakes or your Texas Chainsaw Massacre remakes. It's not, like... good filmmaking. It's like something to get people in the seats to just, you know, make money, essentially. Yeah. But this is just like a great script, great acting, great, you know, like historic, they use like historic papers and whatever to like base their story off of.
He really did. And some of them are like direct quotes from what people were saying. And
I mean,
it's crazy.
So good. So good.
It took him 4 years to write this movie. He really took his time, because he had to wait for funding for the film to come through anyway. So he just kind of like kept going and really got attached to the details. And he studied Shakespeare in his earlier years. So that kind of helped him with like the speech and like the language portion of it, although it's not exactly Shakespearean, it's still kind of like, you know,
it's an awkward, it's not natural to us nowadays. It felt very period, and I appreciated it so much more than when, like, you know, I don't know, a lot of movies that you see that take place in France, people have English accents. Like, like weird kind of, you know, like disconnects there. So it really brought you into the world. And
but
I really
appreciate
that.
You could still follow it. I mean, I know some people said that they had a little trouble. And when I watched it the second time, I definitely put on subtitles because I think it helps. But you don't need it. You can follow along very easily.
Yeah.
And Eggers also worked on, like, production and costume design before he started writing and directing. So he had the details down. He knew how to do that.
And he only used natural light or candles?
Yes. Which, the candlelight is terrifying. The
so
lighting,
amazing.
The lighting in this film is terrifying. Like, I love it so much. It's really, really well done. Really, really effective.
It's brilliant. It's so good. And it really, really adds to everything.
Yeah, 100%. So there's lots of long shots, too, like, that happened throughout that kind of just show how alone they really are.
Yeah.
And it's... I love it so much. In terms of the crops, so their crops are rotting. They have corn, and their corn is rotted, pretty much completely rotted. And apparently the type of rot that happened to the corn was a hallucinogenic. So that could cause some of the hysteria and the craziness that the family goes through.
Yeah.
Also, like, the insane hunger they must have and the lack of sleep they seem to have, very little sleep. So, I mean, all of that kind of adds into all of this is what's happening, but then there's also this supernatural element. So you kind of, like, you know that there's something supernatural happening, but there's also this added element of how much of it is real and how much of it isn't, which is kind of fun to play around with thinking about while you're watching it. It's pretty straightforward that it's supernatural, but there's also, like, layers to it, you know?
Right.
It's not just 100% straightforward. So I really
like
that.
Especially, like, the twins, Mercy and Jonas. I think they're twins. I don't know. They're, like,
yes,
the same
thing. Yes, they are. They are twins.
Are, like, I feel like if those kids were my little siblings, I would murder them.
They were horrible.
They're awful.
They're awful.
They're so annoying. And, like, they don't get very, like, well disciplined by their family, but, like,
no.
With the crops being, I mean, I'm assuming that it would affect children faster than it would affect adults. And so it really makes sense that they're just, like, kind of insane.
Yeah. But it's also very, like, Puritan mindset, that you're born evil. You know, original sin. There's, when you're a Puritan, you believe all children are evil, and they have to grow up and make right with God to overcome that. So that's why the mom is so incredibly torn apart through the whole beginning of this movie, because she thinks her baby's in hell.
Yeah.
And as her kids start dying, she thinks they're all in hell. She doesn't think they're in heaven or somewhere lovely or what have you.
Right. Like she has no peace.
I honestly think because they're so religious that she wouldn't even be that as heartbroken if she didn't think that's what happened to them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, she even says that. She's just like, I died. Like, I'm stone. Like, when they died, that's it.
Yeah.
I don't want to be this, but...
Right. Which I thought was really nice and honest, and she, you know, not like the quote-unquote hysterical woman complex that sometimes horror movies will attach itself to. She's more multidimensional than that, and there's more happening within her head. And she recognizes that it's tearing her apart, and she doesn't want to be that person, but that's the person she has to be at that
point.
Exactly.
It's
nice. It's definitely a nice layer to it.
Definitely. It's heartbreaking. It's like you totally get it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we basically follow Thomason, who's the oldest daughter throughout the movie, and she is by far the most confusing character. You can kind of tell what's going on in all the other characters' heads, but you can't really tell what Thomason is thinking a lot of the time. Although, I kind of feel for her, and I probably relate to her the most.
I definitely feel for her, because it really seems like, at the beginning, when they're kind of cast out from their community, that she doesn't want this for herself, but she's trying to be, like, the obedient older daughter. Like, she really wants approval and acceptance from her mother and from her father, And she gets along with her brother Caleb, and she also, like, obviously her little siblings drive her insane, but, like, so we do see her being that, like, older sister, but then also kind of just trying to, like, do the right thing a lot right. as well.
Right. And she prays a lot in the beginning, and you mm-hmm. see her wrestling with her thoughts. You know, she says she's committed all of the sins in her head, and but who hasn't? And I don't know. And her relationship with her brother, Caleb, is also kind of nice in the beginning mm-hmm. before it turns to shit. Even though he really needs to stop fantasizing about her. It's so creepy. I get why they did it, but I have trouble watching a little boy stare at his older sister's boobs for like half a movie. It's like, I mean, I get what you're doing here, but maybe a one less scene with that happening. He's a little boy. He's just starting to like come to terms with sexuality, and he lives in the woods with his family. Like, he has nothing else to look at.
Yeah.
So I get That's it.
That's all he's got. But his mom's real old. His other sister's real young.
Yeah. She's the one. She's got it.
There are no
the
other
one.
Options.
Unfortunately, that's his best Caleb. Option.
And his one other option that he does find in the woods ends up killing him.
Yeah, that's not a great option. It's the one he went with. I don't blame her. She's a very beautiful witch in that moment, if time. But that's why, I mean, but that's why they did it. You know, that's why they kept showing him looking at her, is so that when he's in the woods, it's like, so he's so easily seduced.
It makes sense because he was obviously very lustful.
Yeah.
He's got these things that are constantly on his mind. He's a preteen boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because it was forever ago doesn't mean that those thoughts still didn't exist.
But literally both of those scenes were done without words. You know, but that was communicated without words, and very, very well done.
Yeah.
I like it when little things like that are kind of just pop up, you know.
Harvey there Scrimshaw, who played Caleb, did such a great job.
Oh my God. Yes.
He killed that scene where it's like his possession death scene.
100%. The very end, I had like goosebumps. I was like, who is this kid? He's
seriously
fantastic.
I was like, oh my, that he's really dying. He's really dying.
He has this smile on his face, and he sees God, and you can see everything on his face. He's very, I don't know, really, really amazing work by the oldest children in this movie.
Yes.
The baby also fantastic job.
Yeah, little Sam.
Mercy and Jonas, however, fuck,
drove me insane.
They're horrible. I mean, and the acting is, I mean, it's as good as you're gonna get.
Yeah.
But comparative to all of the other characters in this movie that are acting their asses off, there's quite a contrast there. I mean, it's to be expected. They're like 5 years old, but
yeah, they were probably like, just play and scream at your sister. These are the words that you want to say.
Right. And some of the time, and a lot of the times it was good. There was a weird scene when Caleb is possessed and they're on the ground and they're rocking back and forth, where I'm just like, I don't believe them. Like, it's not, I couldn't tell if, and maybe this was intentional, but I couldn't tell if they were playing or if that was really happening to them.
I thought that was intentional because you don't know.
Yeah.
And there's like a lot of aspects from that, obviously, when, you know, like just as a little kid, are they just trying to get attention, or is this something that they actually believe?
Right.
You know, or if, are they actually possessed?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I thought that that was kind of like on purpose, I guess.
Right.
And in my mind, I'm leaning towards the fact that they're just kind of playing at this, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, they're just kind of being like annoying little kids who don't really like their older sister.
Yeah.
And are just kind of like tormenting her in exchange. But obviously, like, that's really interpretive.
Yeah, but then as the story moves on, and Thomason is in the barn with them, like, and they say that they talk to Black Phillip.
Black Phillip!
Black Phillip. when they talk to Black Phillip, you know, she's like, wait, are you really talking to Black Phillip? Because that's not cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrifying. Because at that moment, you think they're kids, they're just joking, but... You know, Mercy says something about how she saw the witch in the wood, and she's the witch in the wood, and the clickety-clack, that clickety-clack kid, I didn't like that part. Just like running around screaming clickety-clack, my broom is hitting the branches, or something like that.
Yeah.
It freaked me out a little bit.
I think but it's
you,
all
you think that's like, just her imagination, you know, and then yeah. Later and later you just find out more things, like they're talking to Black Phillip, and then they're having seizures on the ground, and then they have this crazy labored breathing, and they're like passed out for some, you know what I mean? Like there's, then you're like, okay, they must really be possessed by something. But it's very, like, you're not unsure of it for a lot of the movie.
Yeah.
And then they just kind of disappear at the end. They don't, like, nothing actually happens. We don't know what happens to them. We assume that they are used for some sort of ritual, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Because I think...
Or they just are left in the woods. If their parents are dead, true. They're not surviving.
That's true. I think I thought... The first time I saw it, that they died, that they were dead on the ground. But I don't think they didn't actually show that. So that must have been my imagination running away with me. They must have just, the witches must have taken them because there was a witch in there with her. And that witch is terrifying. Mm-hmm. The one milking the goat. Ugh. Okay. So some cool things in this movie, there was, when they were draining the blood from Caleb's head when they thought he was sick. That's a real thing that they used to do. It's called bloodletting. And it was actually pretty, like, a lot of times they started doing this in, like, ancient Egypt, I think. I might be going back too far. But they did that up until the 18th century. That was a real medical thing people used to do, where wherever ails you, they would let blood drain out of that area of you. And it would actually reduce your blood pressure. So it, in some instances, actually did help to cure you. But it's also extremely terrifying. And it's kind of a nice little detail that Robert Eggers added into the story.
I totally remember them doing that in Little Women. And when I was little, I was like, what are they doing?
Yeah. I was like, I know that's a real thing. I need to look it up because
that's
terrifying. But I like that. That addition to it, because there's nothing creepier than draining blood from somebody's face. There's not much creepier than that anyway. Also, Black Phillip was a psycho goat in real life. He was terrible. Ralph, who played William, the father, said that Black Phillip, whose actual name was Charlie, was terrible, and he sent Ralph to the hospital 3 times. During the filming of this movie.
Wow.
At one point, he actually detached a tendon from his rib.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, because apparently Ralph had 2 modes, which was one was sleeping and the other was attacking Ralph. Those were the only 2 modes he had. So,
what a nightmare.
Highly effective in making Ralph afraid of him, but as a goat, as an actor goat, he was terrible. And he was by far the worst animal actor on set. So,
and the one with the biggest part.
Yeah, he said that the horse was great, the hair, fantastic. He said the hair was a wonderful actor, but the goat, not so much. So, Black Phillip truly is terrifying in real life, apparently. Don't want to mess with him. Did you see on Etsy someone makes these stuffed heads for the wall that look like Black Phillip?
I did not.
I mean, they're ridiculously expensive, but they're kind of cool. I mean, I don't know that I would want one. I don't know where I would put it.
I don't know if I'd want a Black Phillip anywhere near me in real life.
I might want it in, like,
Maybe a picture, but yeah, I don't know if I'd actually want a head protruding from my wall.
It's very big. Like, I think if it was smaller scale, but I guess that kind of defeats the purpose. But but yeah, I think that I can't say enough good things about this movie. Really, really fantastic. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about?
No. I think I love it, and I think that people should see it without any expectations if they haven't seen it already.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Although if you haven't seen it and you're listening to this, I'm sad, because then we spoiled the ending for you. But let's talk about the ending a little bit, because there is practical. This movie is mostly practical effects, and CGI was really just used to clean it up a bit. So, the effects at the end are very good. I really liked the ending of this movie a lot.
Me too.
It does make me a little sad that because the goat that played Black Phillip was so hard to work with that they actually didn't do all the scenes with him that they wanted to. And I wonder what those might have looked like. But I think all in all, it's really, really, truly fantastic. And Anya Taylor-Joy, who played
Thomason,
really fantastic actress. Truly, truly, she did a great job. Yeah.
Awesome. I agree. I partly wonder, almost, you know, how, like, if Steven Spielberg used the shark as much as he wanted to in Jaws, it wouldn't have been as effective. Like, if that kind of would have been the same thing. Because I kind of like the limited use of Black Phillip as being an actual talking goat, you know, like, I like it them only having that.
Yeah, I don't know if he was supposed to be talking, but I think maybe he was supposed to be doing something other than laying down or bucking, which when you watch the movie knowing that, you really do see he's really just only laying down or bucking. Those are his two modes.
He only has two modes. He's either chilling or he's bringing down the house.
And I am seriously fearful when I rewatch this after learning that for those two baby children. Oh my god, the babies just running around him in the beginning, and he is going nuts.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know that goat is crazy. Why are you letting those children run around him? If I was a parent, if I was a parent on that set, I'd be flipping out.
They're like, do we have insurance?
Yes, yeah. Good. For our children that might die. Yeah. Oh my god. Okay. Anyway, let's move on.
Green Room.
We love it. That's my stamp of approval that you just heard. I'll do it again in case you missed it.
Boom.
Stamp of approval.
Approved.
Double approval. Okay. Let's move on. What's our second movie?
My number one of the year.
My number one of the year also. I'm copying you. Green Room. Fantastic. Okay.
So good.
It's had its American release on May 13th, 2016. Interesting, both these movies are A24 productions. So, which A24 comes out with some really great movies. I need to, like, stay on top of their website and really just pay attention to every movie that they put out. If they put out both these movies this year, and they're two of my favorites, so.
That's fair.
Let's pay attention to A24 a little bit. Green Room is written and directed by Jeremy Saulnier, starring Anton Yelchin, Alia Shawkat, Patrick Stewart, and Imogen Poots.
Imogen.
Is Imogen? What kind of a name is that? It's too difficult.
Imogen Poots.
Imogen Poots. Poots?
Yeah.
Poots? Really?
Yes, she was in 28 Weeks Later.
No, I know, and I think she's a fantastic actress, and she's lovely. I can't with her name. I can't. There's nothing wrong with her. It's just I can't with her name. Imogen Poots. Someone gave birth to someone and thought, this child looks like Imogen Poots. Poots. Poots is the last name. I'm sorry.
It's not her fault.
It's not. But she could change it. Many actors do. It's very famous that actors do that. Don't do it as much anymore. They should. I can't pronounce anyone's name anymore.
I know. It's crazy.
We get it. You're different. You're special. Whatever. Can't anyone just be named Betsy Johnson anymore.
There's already a Betsy Johnson.
I feel like how I picked Betsy Johnson, but that's an easy name to say. I wasn't even thinking of the designer. It just happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, getting back to Green Room. Jeremy Solner is, I'm not saying that, I don't care. His previous effort was Blue Ruin, which is supposed to be really good, and I think it's on Amazon Prime as well, but I haven't gotten to see that one yet.
I haven't seen it either. I haven't seen any of his other films.
This is really his, that's really his only other full-length movie he's done. He's really, it's really good. This movie is fantastic. He wrote and directed that one as well, though, so I think it's probably worth checking out.
I see it.
So this movie is special to me. It's so good. I didn't want to see this movie when it first came out. It didn't interest me. I saw the trailer. It didn't interest me. And then after, I like went ahead. I don't know if I, when we first started talking, Carly, about doing the podcast, had I seen it yet? Or I think maybe you told me I had to.
Yeah, I don't think you had, but I told you that no dogs were harmed in the making of it.
Yeah. I really had a hard time getting myself to watch it. I don't know why. I just thought it looked violent for the sake of violent and nothing else. And sometimes I just don't, I'm not interested in those kinds of movies all the time. But I'm really glad I, there's so much going on in this movie, and it's not, the violence is good. Like, it's really well done, and it's, it's not excessive. It's
Nothing gratuitous about it.
But there, I mean, it's gory, and it's some parts are like seriously crazy. But they're, but it's done in a way that's like it needed to be done that way. Like, it's highly effective in the way it's done, and it's not too much or too little. It's like just right. I love it. So the basic plot of this movie is a punk band traveling the country. Comes to a stop somewhere, I forget where, and they do an interview. They play some horrible show where they have get like zero money, so they can't get home. They're siphoning gas, they're cutting corners where they can, and the kid feels bad because he kind of fucked him over and offers to get him hooked up for some show where they're going to get paid $350. We'll get back to that. At some skinhead bar in the middle of nowhere. So they go and do it, and shit hits the fan, and they can't leave because a murder happened, and yeah, that's the basic plot.
Yep, yep.
So I just,
I love this. See, like, I kind of had a different, I have been totally in love with Anton Yelchin since I saw him in, Alpha Dog in 2006. Uh-huh. He was part of my trifecta of Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Ryan Gosling, Anton Yelchin.
Got it.
My love triangle.
Your imagined love triangle.
Exactly. So I was super excited to see this movie in theaters. I think I saw it the weekend that it came out, and then I saw it again after I realized there was no dog murder. And the thing that I loved about this movie is that you see, it's called Green Room, you know, it's about, you know, like a hardcore punk band, and you know that they play this Nazi situation. And I loved it because the reason why they got stuck there was like not what I was expecting. Because I was expecting this like punk band who plays, you know, Nazi punks fuck off is their first song that they open with. And I was expecting it to kind of be like, you know, Nazis versus this punk band. And right. So when like they're about to leave and everything's fine and they're like, oh, here's your money. Sorry, you just have to go. And then one thing, you know, someone leaves their cell phone in the green room, totally fucks up everything.
Yeah.
It's like not how I was expecting it to go.
No, not at all. And Jeremy, I don't have his last name. I'm just going to say the director had said in interviews that he, you know, Nazis are such a easy enemy. They're, you know, you just put the name Nazi on something there. You got an enemy, enemy. And he didn't want to do that with this movie. He wanted to use skinheads because they're the most militarized, the most organized of the punk rock subgenres. Thanks, I got that out right. Because they have a specific look to them. They have a uniform. They have a haircut. They have everything like very specific to them. And they're known to be violent. They're known to organize and be violent. So he thought that that would be really good, but he also wanted every character to feel human. And
yeah,
he didn't want anyone to be like this faceless enemy or a faceless victim. He wanted everyone to have their own thing, everyone to have their own humanity. And I think that's what makes this film so successful, is that there's so many like layers, there's personality, no one's 100% bad and no one's 100% good. Everyone's has their own reasons for doing what they're doing. And it's, I think that that's what makes this film so great, so successful.
I definitely agree. And especially, you know, there's definitely that kind of rift almost between, mm-hmm. you know, like Nazi punks right. and other punks, like Dead Kennedy style, you know,
right.
like that kind of genre. Like there's definitely that kind of like aggressive whatever, like between the two of them. And so right. this is like an honest relationship off the bat that like they knew what they were getting into when they played, and they knew, you know, like it's just, yeah. it's so real. And it is, the way that they portrayed everything real. Was so real.
Yeah. As if anyone has ever been in the punk rock world, hardcore world, what have you, this feels familiar to you. This feels like everything about it is very honest. It's one of
I feel
the
like
most...
I've been to that show.
I've been to that show. I've hung out with this band. I've been in that van before. Like everything feels very real, and the reason is because the director lived it. He was into like 90s like punk rock hardcore in DC. Like he lived it, so he's able to really bring it to life in a way that I've never seen punk and hardcore being brought to life on film before, anything like this. I mean, the only thing that kind of comes close maybe is SLC Punk, but even that is like super extreme, like
yeah.
fantasy land. So it's kind of nice to see that, but then it also makes it extra terrifying because it's so realistic.
Yeah.
So parts of that layer that really impressed me are the I love how they're just staying with some random punk kid that you know, they probably met online, and he's interviewing for him, his zine and his, you know, his little radio station, his college radio station. And, you know, they're arguing about if he's a legit punk or not by looking at his vinyl. And they're, you know, I love, it feels so real. Like, you know, they get mad because they give him a shit show, and, you know, all of it feels so fucking real. I loved it.
Because it's so true. I mean, that not getting paid for a show is definitely something that can make or break your tour. And sure. like I've been on that tour before, like where, like I used to be in a melodic hardcore band, and we would have gotten like $50 for shows. Like we just needed gas money so that our van could make it to the next destination.
Fuck, Carly, I totally forgot about your band. How did I forget about your band?
I don't know. They're like a punk hardcore band. They're playing this like Nazi show. But when you say like you'll get $350 for a show, I'm like, right. okay. I'll play any fucking show for $350.
I was totally texting our friend Mike yesterday, because he's been in hardcore bands forever. And I was like, have you ever gotten paid $350 for a show? He's like, fuck no.
No,
no one's going to pay me $350. He's like, unless you're like
$50 in dinner.
Yeah. Like if you're really like you get gas if you're lucky. Like that's what merch is for. Like
exactly.
you don't get shit. Like you get a free drink maybe, you know, like so I really loved that. That everything felt honest except for that $350. But I mean, who wouldn't jump at that money? Everyone would jump at that money. But it just seems kind of unrealistic that they would be getting paid that money. So
I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense when it seems to be this warehouse right. that is in the middle of nowhere, kind of. But like, to draw bands, I mean, that wouldn't probably normally play there because of the stigma.
Yeah.
Like, maybe it makes a little bit of sense, and especially if it's that much out of the way, and maybe there were strings pulled because this kid knew that he really, like, kind of messed up. And, you know, but yes, $350, an insane
amount. It's an insane amount of money. But no wonder why they would jump at that. And I love how they're like, you know, they're talking to him, and the kid's like, you know, just stay away from politics. You'll be fine. Play your earlier stuff. Play your heavy stuff.
And I love my brother.
And when they just start playing, oh my God, Dead Kennedys.
Amazing.
The first time I watched this, I'm like, oh, they're totally fucked. Like, why are you
not? That's why I was like, well, now this movie makes so much sense.
like, I'm laughing, but also so scared for them when that happens. Because it's like, that's exactly what you want to do in that scenario. You want to be like, fuck you. But.
And that just adds to, like, that is this band. This is beautiful. This is beautiful. I love it.
It really is. It's fantastic. If it happened in real life, I would definitely, like, get out of there, like, right after the show. Like, no, I'm not. I don't know that I want to see what happens to these poor people.
Amazing. Oh my God. So good.
So good. Ugh. Love it. So, yeah. There was also, I love, it's just little things. I showed, like, a Fear vinyl record, and I'm like, oh, I know that one. Like, it's little things. I just love how there's just, like, little personal touches to, like, if you were ever into punk or hardcore, like, it feels personal to you. And it's also got, like, that crazy elitism that for some reason punk really got.
Yeah.
Like, are you a true punk or are you a poser punk? You know, like, there's, like, everyone just likes the same music. It's okay if we don't all, like, look the same and like the same bands. But, you know, when you're young, it's like, who can be more punk than
who? Who can be the coolest?
When they're being interviewed by the dude.
The Desert Island Band.
Yeah, the Desert Island Bands. They're all fucking, like, lying. You know? They're all, like, saying, like, the most hardcore band they can think of to, like, what's the coolest band I can say right now to sound legit and cool to people? And then as they're dying, like, just...
Real Desert Island Band.
Fucking going for it. Like, I loved that. There's so many, like, little funny things like that that I don't think I caught how funny it was the first time around. There's definitely a lot of humor in it. And they're kind of just, like, jokes that are personal to the scene, which is cool.
I watched an interview with Jeremy and Anton, and they were talking about Patrick Stewart's involvement and his performance, and they were saying that, like, he is so terrifying because he is so quiet. Mm-hmm. Like, they said decibel wise this is the quietest performance that he's ever done in his entire career,
right?
And there's only one instance of the movie where he kind of, like, loses his cool, and then he just, like, immediately apologizes and goes back to being that, like, calm demeanor of, like, we're getting this taken care of. And it's just like that kind of even tone throughout the whole thing that is just like, this character, do not fuck with him because he's, like, got his army together.
Truthfully, his character Darcy is super terrifying, but he's also very smart, and you really get the feeling that he is seducing these kids into this life, you know, like,
oh, yeah, with the drugs.
We are your family. Like, it's really got a very gang mentality to it. They respect him. They fear him. He's their leader, you know. So they do what he says to a certain extent. And it's just so good. Patrick Stewart's fantastic in this. And it's great to see him in a role like this. He said when he first got the script, apparently he was the last character to be cast. They didn't cast him till 10 days before they started filming.
Oh, wow.
And he got the script, and he sat and read the first 40 pages and got so scared that he had to turn on all the perimeter lights, lock all the doors, pour himself a glass of whiskey in order to be able to finish the script. And he loved it so much. Like, he immediately jumped at the chance, and I love him.
I'm so happy he did, because he I love how much of a departure it is from, like, his kind of normal whatever, you know, his normal roles. It's so good.
Yeah, I mean, it must be fun for him, too, to play this, like, super terrifying, scary, concentrated type person. Because he's usually very, like, extreme. Like, he's, you know, he plays a lot of very important characters, but very, like, one-sided, one-dimensional, like,
kind of lovable characters.
Yeah.
I love Patrick Stewart.
That's
you just
true.
Love Patrick Stewart.
There's nothing not to love. There's nothing not to love. But it's kind of, like, similar to, like, being a fan of Malcolm in the Middle and then getting into, like, Breaking Bad. Because you're like,
yeah,
wait, what? Aren't you the goofy dude that plays Malcolm in the Middle? No, no.
That's I will your... say the difference.
Bryan Cranston did a very similar thing. It's like you grow a goatee and suddenly you're the scariest motherfucker around. I don't know how you do that.
I will say, though, I didn't, by the end of Breaking Bad, I had zero sympathy for his character and I didn't really like him anymore.
But that's
but
the
like
point.
Patrick Stewart, I understood this guy.
Yeah.
Like, 100%. You know, like he's still likable, even though he's trying to murder one of the three loves of my life. And like you understand why all these people are seeking his approval, almost like a father figure. And they just want to do his bidding and they just want the acceptance and to be liked by him and to be part of the club. Like that, I feel like nobody really could have played that as well as Patrick Stewart.
Right.
Like he just was Darcy. Like he really embodied everything that character kind of was.
And that's what the director said. It's like once he heard him like audition, I'm sure he didn't audition, but once he saw him in that role, he was just like, yeah, of course, you're definitely 100% Darcy. You know, like, I don't know why I didn't see it before. This is definitely happening. So yeah, I really can't say enough about it. We can just maybe kind of go through some of our favorite things, I guess, instead of going through it piece by piece. I guess we've been doing that, but
I will say I love this movie so much. It was really hard for me to watch this second time around because obviously Anton Yelchin passed away in June and I haven't seen it since then. Mm. And it was like legit hard for me to watch the scene where he gets his arm cut.
Yeah.
And he's like screaming. Like, that was really hard for me to watch. But once I got that past that point, I love this movie more every time I see it.
Yeah. And he's such a great actor in this. It really is heartbreaking. He died way too young.
Way too young.
It sucks that it's just a car accident, you know?
It makes me so sad.
So sad. But yeah, when his hand gets torn up, that is a scene.
Yeah.
That is a really highly effective scene.
So I love that they duct taped it together.
Oh, and then I don't know what anyone else is thinking, but when they're duct taping his wrists back together, the only thing is I'm thinking is when they take that off, it's going to be fucking horrible.
I also thought the same thing.
I understand why you're doing that, but that just makes, I hope they knock you out when they take that off because it's going to be horrible.
Agreed. 100%.
I also really, really, really loved Aaliyah Shawkat. Her role was actually written for a man. And they decided to put her in that role, and I just loved her character. I loved the depth she had. They didn't change any language when they cast her in it. So it's just really funny because I totally see myself as her, like, even though I'm not at all a musician. And if I was, I definitely wouldn't be a whatever she is. Is she a bassist or a drummer? I don't know what she plays, but
I think she played bass. Oh, no, because Anton Yelchin was bass.
Yeah.
Was he?
I think so. I actually think she was the drummer, but maybe I'm mistaken.
No, she was a guitarist.
Oh, okay.
And then,
they're actually all playing their instruments. They are playing as a legit band. That is real. They recorded those songs ahead of time.
I think that they said that all of the actors pretty much knew or had experience being in a band or playing music, except for the Tiger, the singer. Callum Turner.
Mm, yes.
He he was the only one that hadn't.
Yeah, the other two guys in the band, I kind of meld them together as one character. I know that they're very different, but we don't really know too much about them. One of them's like a wrestler, obviously. He's very good at wrestling, and thank goodness for that. But yeah, having trouble speaking. Aaliyah's character's name is Sam, and when they're stuck in the green room and they're looking in the ceiling, through the ceiling tiles to see if like there's a way out there, there's like all these wires hanging, and I just love it. She goes, "Oh, that looks like asbestos," and they're like, "It's not asbestos." And then she's like, "Watch out, that could be a live wire," and they're like, "It's just speaker wire." Like, I just love that, because that would be me. Like, I always think of the worst possible, like the weirdest, like she should be freaking out about so many things right now, and those aren't the thing. Like, asbestos, really? Like, you're about to get murdered and you're worried about asbestos? Like, like that should be like your
the
least,
last thing on your last, you're like, crawl through that asbestos if you can get out for that. You right. Just go for it, hold your breath.
Exactly. Like, but that's me. Like, that's, I obsess about like the least scariest things that are happening at that moment. That's just how I am. So I totally related to her, and I loved how that was supposed to also be a guy, so it's not like sexist really if you think about it, but kind of when you're watching it you're like, oh, because she's the girl, she doesn't know what speaker wire looks like, or, but it's not, it's just like that character was written that way, and it's, I relate to it. I just happen to be a woman, okay?
I love that.
I would totally, I think I did that to my husband the other day. I'm like, watch out for that wire. He's like, that's not going to shock me. It's not. It's like, it's not a real thing. I don't understand how things work sometimes. And then the skinhead thing was a little too realistic at times. The part with the laces and, I don't know.
Yeah. They did everything. I mean, everything about this film is just honest. It's great.
Yeah. And I love when Sam says her favorite Desert Island band is actually Simon and Garfunkel.
Yes.
Because I was like, yes, I love Simon and Garfunkel. We are soulmates. I feel like we're soulmates.
You are soulmates.
Her character in this movie and me in real life are soulmates. Soulmates.
Together forever.
I absolutely love her. I love her. And then what was Amber's? Amber's was Madonna and Slayer. I love that. And they just fucking run out. So scary.
And then watching them get taken down by the dogs or the people.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah, let's talk about the dogs for a minute, because those dogs are terrifying. And
yes.
Like Carly said, she had a really hard time watching this the first time because she kept waiting for something bad to happen to her dog. And
I like was curled up in a ball almost with like my hands around my ears. And when the dogs would come up, I literally told my friend to like tell me when it was over.
Right.
And he was like, it's fine. Nothing happened. And right. So then the second time that I watched it, I could like watch it fine, but like literally every time there was a dog, like the first time I saw this movie, every time there was any kind of dog on the screen, I was like in fetal position covering my whole face.
Yeah, well, and Justin from the Horror Business podcast said the same thing, where he's like, he hadn't seen this movie, and Justin's also like a hardcore kid, and like, I'm just like, how have you not seen that? You have to. Of course, I didn't see it up until like you yelled at me. So
yeah, guys,
I felt it was my duty to yell at him, and like
there's no animal abuse or even
he's
like
us. He's like animal. He's an animal guy, you know.
But, yeah, nothing. I think they use the feedback from the microphone to kind of like freak the dogs out and make them run away,
which is a great thing. It seems very Jeremy Saulnier, I'm not saying that right, I don't care. I'm just going to keep saying it wrong. Jeremy Saulnier did that. I feel like he did that on purpose, like, because people don't like seeing animals die.
I really
like
appreciate
seeing
that
people die.
I, as much as I love, like, all, like, the people in this movie, I probably would not have been able to watch it or enjoy it as much if there was something and that's so weird because it's like we love horror movies. We can watch people get murdered every which way. But like you bring a dog into the picture and I'm like, nope, can't
well,
do
it's
it.
No different. It's no different than some people having trouble watching kids get killed in horror movies, too. Yeah. Like can like horror movies and not want to see that happen.
What's so wrong about that? And I was going to say it's funny because but of I feel innocence. like that's the wrong way to like kind of phrase it. But like when a movie does use like a kid death or something like that, I'm always like, oh shit, we're going there. Like that's what kind of movie this is going to be, you know? It kind of like sets the tone for everything else.
Well, and it's also like kind of like become a trope, you know, like, oh, there's an animal in a horror movie, it's probably going to die. You know, like it's kind of got to that level at one point, and then I think they started pulling back on doing that because I haven't seen it as much in recent films. But I mean, think about Halloween. Like they kill dog, no problem in that movie, and
I still had a problem with it. I'm like, no, Michael,
no, I said they killed the dog, no problem. Still had a problem with it. And whenever I watch a scene and an animal gets killed, like I think that's terrible, and then I immediately think Carly would hate this.
I usually end up crying, even if there's like no reason for it, and it wasn't like there's some. I don't know.
I don't want to say that I don't have a problem with it because I totally do. I just think I'm a little bit. I have a little bit less of a problem with it only because I just know how fake it is. Like I don't. Right. I try just to remind myself like it's not real. Like the dog is fine.
I try to do that too, but like it doesn't even matter. Even if it's like something animated or CGI and it's like really CGI. Yeah. I don't know what it is, but like the end of King Kong, like the new one, I was like crying a river. Like it's ridiculous. I don't know what it is, but like
because
any kind of animal
are...
implied death, whatever, I'm like a mess.
There's an innocence with animals, you know? There's an innocence there. They're just animals. They don't have anything to do with all of our garbage.
They're just following their instincts.
And I really like what they did with the dogs in this movie because the man who trained the dogs, he trained them to be fighting dogs. He trained them to attack people. They respond to German phrases and attack phrases and... they
oh,
do what
when the dog at the end...
Wait, I'm getting to
die.
It. I'm
sorry.
Getting to it. Stop it. No, I know it's exciting, but like what I'm trying to get to, the point is like the owner, like yeah, he's a skinhead, he's an asshole, but he also really loves these dogs and he really cares about his dogs. And when the dog gets hurt, and the dog only gets hurt, but he pretty much says this dog's gonna die, but I'm gonna give him a shot so he can like whatever kill someone. I will.
No, he doesn't get hurt. The dog doesn't get hurt. He gives him the thing, the shot to like whatever to die because this is going to be the dog that's going to take the rap for basically like destroying his kid.
Oh, I didn't catch that. Good call. Yeah. Good call. But I love how at the end when the dog, you know, he's walking back to the house and his owner is dead on the ground. The survivors of this whole event are so afraid of this dog, but he really just wants to be with his owner. And he's really not a bad dog. He's just been trained to do those things. So, like, it's just very, like, I love that ending part where he just lays with his dead owner.
He goes and lays down. Oh, my God. It makes me cry.
It really is. It's very touching. And, like, it really, like, makes you feel for the animal, too. Because you're just like, he just wants his owner to love him. And wants to do right by his owner. And he doesn't understand everything else that's happening, you know?
Exactly. This is what he was trained to do. This is his life. This is what he knows.
Yeah. So I really, really loved that level of the story also. And they did it, like I said, I think the director said that he wanted to make everyone human. And I think he really succeeded in that. Every character... You know who's wearing white laces and red laces and who's not, but it doesn't really matter towards the end. Everything gets blurred, and some skinheads are stepping up and trying to do what's right.
Yeah.
And not everyone. I don't know. It's interesting how it makes you feel that way. But really, really well done movie.
I'm looking at the Green Room trivia page on IMDb, and I totally did not even realize that the first and last words spoken in the film are the same.
Yes, they are.
That's a fun fact.
And they are some of the best lines. I love that. I love the ending.
Me too. Yeah. I totally do.
I really liked Amber too, even though she's supposed to be a skinhead, right?
Yes.
To an extent, or a skinhead groupie or something. She's got white laces on her Doc Martens. So, you know, you're like totally not sure how you're supposed to feel about her, but you also know her best friend was trying to run away and do the right thing. And
yeah, she just wanted to get out.
So, you know, maybe that's just a uniform she put on to do what she had to do. But Amber is kind of like no-nonsense badass. So I really loved her. And I loved like her little, she had a lot of like, I don't give a fuck lines. Like when Amber and Pat are on the couch at the end and they're trying to figure out, like, they're just basically giving up. There's no way out. They feel hopeless. And Pat says, shouldn't we be panicking? And they're just tired and exhausted. And Amber just says, I'm just hungry. Like, I just want something. And then, you know, Pat says, I got it. I got my Desert Island Band. And Amber goes, tell someone who gives a shit. Like, she doesn't.
So good.
She doesn't care. I just love her. I love her. And then, oh, my most favorite interchange between the two of them. Pat says, I thought we would ruin the crime scene. And she's like, oh, I thought we'd make a new one. So good. She's such a badass. I love her. But then I'm also kind of torn because she's got white laces on. I don't know how I feel about any of it, honestly. And I guess that's the point, right? We're all human.
I mean, they're just trying to survive. And so they obviously have to team up because they're each other's only hope, really, of getting out of there.
Yeah. Another cool thing to note is that the poster for this movie is a nod to London Calling. The Clash's album cover, where he's smashing the guitar, and in the movie poster, he's holding a machete. It's very similarly framed, though, kind of cool.
I love this movie. So to me, this movie is like perfect from front to back. I there's nothing that I would change about this movie.
I don't think there's anything I would change either. I think I really liked it. I really, really liked it. And I liked it even more the second time I saw it, which is more than I can say with my favorite movie from last year, which was It Follows. I think I liked it less the more I watched it, where this one I really feel like I like it more the more I watch it.
I 100% agree with that. I really loved It Follows until I saw it. Not that it's a bad movie, but it definitely loses some of its magic the more you see it.
Yeah, it totally does. It's not as effective the more you watch it, whereas this one is still just as terrifying, and if anything you just notice more and more detail they put in. And like I said, it's great. There's a little bit of humor, there's a little bit of gore, there's something for everybody in this one, really. And it also has like a very artistic feel. Like the cinematography is really good. It's slightly gritty, but it's mostly beautiful, you know.
It's true, because you're in such like an enclosed space for most of the film, but then even when you expand to the bigger spaces, it's still so close. Everything's still like right there.
Yeah. Really successful. Okay. Sounds like we're wrapping up on Green Room. Hope you guys watched it. It's awesome. Watch it again. It's on Amazon Prime. Just watch it as many times as you can before they take it off.
Please watch it. Just, you know, leave it on. Leave it on loop. Just playing it so that they keep it on there so I can watch it whenever I want. Oh, I should just buy it.
I know. You should just own it. I don't know why we don't. It's definitely something I should add to my Christmas list. Okay, so let's talk about what's just going on with us. Anything new to report for you, Carly? Work going well?
Oh, yeah. Work is going well. There's not really any horror movies that I have really been excited about that are coming out soonish.
Yeah.
But I am excited. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. But what is going on with you? You recently played a little game for your phone.
Sean from The Horror Show posted something about a game on Twitter. I'm not really a game person, but I like simple games. I just don't like complex games because I'm not good at them. But he mentioned a game called Sarah is Missing. It's for your phone. You download it. And basically, it's like you found someone's phone and you have to try to figure out what happened to them with said phone. And you have access to their photos, their videos, their text messages, their emails. And the operating system for the phone tries to help you. It's very weird. There's lots of plot holes. It's kind of silly. It's not scary. But it's supposed to be. So that's good. It's a worthy effort. It's an interesting concept, I think. And maybe for, you know, there's some jumpy things. But even the jumpy things I was really expecting for the most part. So it's okay. It takes about 20 to 30 minutes to play it. So, you know, if you're interested, check it out. Let us know what you think. If you're not, then don't. It's like, I don't know. I don't really recommend it, but I also don't. If you're interested in it, you should at least try it out. I guess I'm just indifferent to it. But
I was really surprised that you can't, that it's not available for iPhone.
Well, it's weird because the operating system on the phone that you're using is iPhone looking. So, I mean, I have a Galaxy, so I had no problem downloading it, but Carly wasn't able to download it on her iPhone. So I don't know why it would be okay on one format and not the other. Maybe they're just not releasing it on iPhone yet. But yeah, I don't think you're missing out on anything too much, Carly.
Okay.
I also watched Gilmore Girls, which I know everyone who listens to this is very interested in hearing me talk about Gilmore Girls. A year in the life. I watched it in one day. 6 straight hours of Gilmore. It was lovely. Kind of.
I might watch it.
Really?
I've never seen an episode of the Gilmore Girls.
I'd have to start from the beginning.
Yes, no, no, no. I would have to start like from season 1.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, try watching the first few episodes. I think even the first episode of Gilmore Girls is good. I mean, it's got a little bit of cheese. There's definitely a cheese factor, but it's also really funny, clever, interesting. The acting is good. But it's not for everybody.
I like a lot of the actors and actresses that are involved in it.
Yeah.
So, and it was, I guess, like, Kenny was watching it the other day, and I was like, oh, I've never seen that show. And he was like, oh, you'd really like it. And he sent me, like, a little, like, clip of whatever, I guess, he was watching. And I was like, okay, that looks funny. I'll check it out.
It's really funny. Start with the beginning. See if you like it. Definitely don't jump into, like, the newer episodes, because they're really... No. They're really just meant for fans. Like, they're not. They're very weird. There's very weird things happening. It's not quite the same as how the show was, but who's expecting that to happen, really? I'm glad I watched it. I'm glad it happened. But it was also very strange. So, anyway, welcome to the Gilmore Girls podcast. Starring me.
Surprise! Where we take a turn.
You guys thought we were talking about horror movies, but really, we're just getting into it. Just kidding. Yeah, I feel like I watched a horror movie recently that was good, and now I can't think of what it was, so I guess it wasn't that good.
Wasn't there just a movie that came out? Didn't that movie, was it Shut-In?
Yeah, I think that just came out.
Did you see it?
No.
I didn't see it.
Oh, I did watch The Arrival, though, and that was fantastic.
I loved it.
Really recommend that. It's not exactly horror-y, but it's sci-fi-y, for sure.
I loved that movie so much.
Really good. Really unexpected. I wasn't sure what to expect. I just saw that it had good reviews, and I was not disappointed at all.
So good. Amy Adams, man.
I love her. She did great.
She did a great job.
And then coming up next week.
Guys, we're so excited.
So we're going to be doing Friday the 13th, 1 through 8, during the month of December.
What?
We're going to take a break for the week of Christmas and do a special Christmas episode. But the rest of the month will be Friday the 13th. So next week we'll be doing chapters 1 and 2. It's chapters, right? Chapters? Yeah, chapters. Chapters 1 and 2.
Yes.
And making our way through the rest. They're all going to be on Hulu, I think, starting December 2nd, if I'm not mistaken. I probably should have written it down. What else is new? I never write down things. But yeah, we're super stoked to be doing that. So hopefully you guys are too. I haven't watched all of the Friday the 13th. I watched the first three for sure. I know I've seen the fourth. Okay, I've seen the first four. But I know I never watched them in order before, so this will be interesting. Because I've always just kind of been like, oh, it's on, I'm going to watch it. Very few times have I sat down to, like, make an effort. I know I saw Jason Goes to Manhattan. I think that's 8.
I'm excited to watch them, I guess, in the order that they were released.
Yeah.
Because I've never done that with this series before. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of pleasantly surprised when I did for Nightmare on Elm Street. So I don't think this is going to be as cohesive as that.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to...
I would love to do Nightmare on Elm Street, too, because that's, like, my thing. Like, I love Nightmare on Elm Street. Friday the 13th is... I always appreciated the films, but they've never been my thing. Like, I like them, but they're not high on my list of things I enjoy watching.
Have you ever watched Nightmare on Elm Street in a row?
Yes. Yes, that's like all I did all in college.
It's like,
it's really
super, like, they really take elements from each movie and bring them into the next one. Like, it's a story.
So I think it'll be fun to see that with this movie, how the continuation factor, how accurate it is. Because especially since, you know, Jason can't really die. So how they resurrect him in each film will be interesting. So I'm stoked. I'm stoked to do it. So watch 1 and 2. We will discuss. If you haven't, I mean, I guess most people have watched a lot of these movies. So it's not, maybe we'll get a little bit more listeners because we're not forcing them to watch something first before listening.
Yeah, you could just listen. And yeah. You'll be in on the party already.
Yeah. How fun will that be?
Ooh.
All right. Anything else? Anything else to report? Oh, I got my Gremlin sweater in, and it fits perfect. I'm so excited. And
we're all expecting a photo on social media.
I know. I can't do that yet because I'm having an ugly Christmas sweater party, and I don't want people to know what it looks like until they get to see it. So after the party, I will. I promise. Okay. Thanks to Troy from Cave Bastard for our song Sequencing the Drone and Jason Link for our amazing logo. Please visit finalgirlshorrorcast.com for additional contact information for them. We are on Twitter, FinalGirlsHC, and you can also find us on Instagram and Facebook, Final Girls Horrorcast. You can email us, finalgirlshorrorcast@gmail.com. Yeah. Do those things.
We're all over the place.
We're still working on stickers. Still waiting for final design for one of the stickers. And then once I have that, I will order them, I promise. So probably by the end of the month, hopefully. Fingers crossed. Woo. Yeah, it's kind of busy here. I feel like once January happens, everything's going to slow down. But right now, everything is nuts. So I'm just trying to keep my head above water, honestly. Anyway, I think that's it for today.
I think that is a wrap.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week, guys.
Bye.
Bye, my lovelies.